welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another, I think, is going to be exceptional show on dimensional time versus space. And yes, I'm going to actually take this subject on and try to make it easier for you. I've talked about this a half a dozen times or more since I've been on the radio. It's over 9 years now. And I have never had a show where people haven't written, called, or said to me personally, what? You know, it's like, this is one of the hardest subjects to talk about. I am really, really going to work at it tonight. And as a matter of fact, the owner and manager of the station has actually given us more time tonight. He said, you can go longer if you want on this subject. And we might just do that. Hopefully you can listen a little bit longer if you want. Because I'm going to make it easier by using a lot of examples. Not so much, although it's still got to be concepts, of course, and more in the beginning than, you know, as we move on in the show. But I think tonight I've got a model that will bring it together for some people. Now, most people know that my explanation of time and space goes beyond most of modern-day physics. And it is not incompatible with the more, we'll say, formidable models dealing with time and space in part in physics. But it is far more, we'll say, explicit. And as an explanation, it has a great deal more in terms of giving the whys or concepts of how the universe actually works. Most importantly, it's really about God. And that's where we're going to start this evening. I want to begin not at the very beginning of God, because that in itself is a whole other show, but I'm going to talk about rather God at the point where it decides that our universe is its goal, the creation of our universe. And I want you to, if you can, stay with me, be a kind of side chair to me being God. So you're going to be the side chair to God as I think of God. This may help, because from the perspective of God, you begin to understand what time is and what that means to almost everything else that we do in our existence. So in the beginning, the Creator, God, is seeking to have a very full existence. It wants to have the most meaningful existence that it can create. And it comes up with, well, I'll just be God. I've got the idea. The idea is to create something that is self-created, just as I am. And that something will be able to determine how much it's in accord with me or distant from me by a factor that I'm going to create called space. And the measure of the creation that this thing creates is going to be determined by time. So time becomes the common denominator for those things that I'm going to initially create for their experience in oneness with their Creator in me. That's what I'm going to do as God. I want this because I want there to be self-awareness. I want what I'm creating to understand its own Creator and understand its own creation at the same time. And in doing that, that is going to make me incredibly joyful and blissful, because I am not the sole creator. I am not the one who is just carrying on some kind of interesting puppet show, but rather I am enjoying the creations of what I'm going to be called a calling life. And there are some parts of life that are going to be much more creative than others, and those I may enjoy more just because they, in their creations, create less time and space in relationship to me. They're not as distant from me as other parts of life. And so I may enjoy them more. That's okay. But the most important thing is I'm going to get that kick out of all time in having zillions of different kinds of life and life forms interacting and co-creating sometimes with me, the creator, and sometimes even against me, and sometimes they're going to fail in their creations, which will be interesting to me as well. This is the most fascinating experience I can think of, and it's a wonderful experience because as life grows, I grow. I'm making it that way because I'm making it a real experience. It's not some kind of distant thing where I'm just watching. I will experience the senses. I will experience the feelings. I will experience the thoughts. I will eventually experience the beauty and the bliss and eventually the omniscience and the all-powerfulness of life. I'll experience all these things by allowing there to be freedom of those elements in life that I just mentioned. This is going to be a grand experiment for me. I do not know the outcome, and I'm going to even do an interesting comparison. Before I even start, I'm going to try to think of the grandest universe I could think of without life and compare the results. And I know within a very, very short span, it will become amazingly interesting and meaningful, proving to me that this is a vastly superior way for a being like me to exist. Okay, so that's my perspective as God, and you're in the chair next to me listening, and you're going to be in the chair with me as I start this process. The thing that's so fascinating in this is that I now have a grasp on what I didn't before I entered into this conviction and creative thought to make life, because before that, I was in a quandary about what it means to exist when that which exists does not coexist with other parts that are different from it and have freedom to be creative in any way. Or in many ways that it chooses to. Not anyway. There are limits because life itself, as even I am, have some limits. Ah, that's the fun part. Yes, even I will grow from this experience, proving my own limitations. And at the end of the experience, all of the growth of life will be a new reality for me and the life as well. I am a super being beyond question. And because I'm choosing to not just leave in some deistic fashion and make a kind of mechanical model to the situation, I am definitely involved in what happens to my creations. I'm going to intervene at times. I'm not going to just be the being who doesn't do anything. No. When something co-creates with replace the creation that it makes. When something creates against me, I will not force it to change the creation against me. I may help others that are creating with me be more successful against those that are creating against me. As a matter of fact, I'm doing that even as I think about it, because that which is more like me, I like. That which is more against and destructive to me, I don't like. I have that right to do that. And I choose to take that right. So I am not a dispassionate God. I am not an uninvolved God. I'm not a deistic God. I don't believe in a mechanical universe. I believe in a universe of justice. I believe in a universe of truth and love. I believe in a universe of all things trying to work together to be more creative, just as I am. I believe in beauty. And I believe in the right to be powerful in ways that helps others to do so. Not to take power, but to help others to have it. I also believe in the thought of me, which I call spirit. And finally, not lastly, I believe that the creation itself of more of me will reduce the time and space that any life form has, or any life has, form or otherwise, between itself and me. But in reverse, much more time and space will be created by life that cannot co-create even near me, and may, in the worst cases, choose to co-create, will choose to create against me. So this is my position. I am that which I am. I seek to allow others to find what I am, and even if they choose to try to destroy what I am. I have made a universe in which that cannot happen. I have also made a universe in which all life has the opportunity to try anything. All right, so those are the perspectives. That's the perspective of God. Time is the result in perspective of me. My sense of time is that time is my experience of all of the creations of all life. For as long as that life chooses to be either more creative or less creative, will be the time issue. If it's less creative, more and more time is involved, and more space between it and me, and between eventually it and other parts of life that are more creative like me. It will distance itself, and it will create more time in that process. In the lower realms, energy will be manifested. Energy will be manifested whenever time separates from space. The energy will create forces preventing things from being close to each other, but most importantly, from being close to their creator, me. The real penalty of choosing to be against me, it is to suffer the consequences of not being with me. And the real penalty of developing these forces that keeps things away from me also keeps things, all life that chooses to be away from all other life, even other life that is against me and with darkness, with evil, will even be against and separated from other evil eventually. This is my choice. These rules, as I choose to create my universe, ensure that eventually the universe will come together and be good. I'm fixing the dice. Yes, I know. I could not, in good conscience and in compassion and love, allow the universe to just be a simple roll of the dice. I won't permit that. And as Albert Einstein figured out, I won't play dice with the universe. There are certain things that I have created that eventually more advanced humans and souls and other beings either know or will discover. And that is that I'm a God of compassion and goodness. That's me. Now, some that are lost from that, some that see too much time and space between themselves and me, and therefore between themselves and so many others, they may not conclude that is who I am, because they're too far distant from me to know that either I exist or who I exist as. My compassion will still go out to them, but only when they eventually change their position. In the meantime, they'll develop forces from energy that is being manifested from what would be activities that bring them closer together. The same energy that would bring closeness and intelligent activities becomes forces against those who are against me. I know. I'm not just indifferent. And you should know who I am. If you are co-creative with me, you will discover these same things I tell you about me now. Tonight's show will be a journey to discover these things, especially about time and space, so that you can know me better. And that's why tonight's show is going to be different than just the show about the science. I love science. Science has so much truth in it, but it lacks some of the higher qualities that exposes more clearly who I am. It doesn't fulfill the richness of me as a creator. Scientists can be grand creators, but so many are not fulfilled enough and don't look deep enough into becoming closer as a co-creator with me. They want to be a creator separate from me in some strange egocentric fashion. Most unfortunate. It's a victimization coming from part of humanity. Being human is so difficult. I chose this particular kind of life as to be the first life that truly could understand me. But it's an onus in itself. I knew it would be. To understand one's own creator causes almost immediate complications and problems. Questions arise about one's freedom, one's ability to be conscious, one's ability to interact fairly and justly with others if there's a God. So many have misinterpreted me as being a God of complete, abject, and total, unfortunately, determinism. This is not me. I am not a God of determinism. I am a God that is against darkness and evil, but not against determining the lives of those I give life to. That is their creation, and I wouldn't take that away from them. There are a few bumps along the road for those who do choose to go against me, but not enough to prevent them from choosing such a path. And so, from my perspective, I look at this as a challenge that humanity has, because that challenge only brings them closer to me in the long run. Oh, in the short run, yes. There are some who go in a very wrong direction, and many more who only venture here and there off of the path of light. Light being that part of me that first gives freedom and then gives the awareness and consciousness that I bathe in. But those who have that trouble, they bring so much greater meaning eventually into their own life and then into mine. Like any parent who is watching their children grow, I relish in those parts of life, especially human life, that struggle so much to overcome their doubts, to recognize their capabilities, and to fulfill in themselves the creations that they can do. And the more they co-create with me, the more I totally smile and joyful and in bliss with them. And when they don't, I am just as sad, if not more sad, than they are for the suffering. Their suffering is caused by their own destruction of their own consciousness and for the lack of creation, which leads to meaninglessness, which I created a universe so that meaninglessness can be wiped out eventually. But it has to be available for those who choose it so they can see the better path. This is my perspective. This is how I seek there to be a kind of universe in which we all can eventually say it was one heck of a ride. And the universe is not the end. It is the beginning. There are endless places for growth. Beyond the universe I've created, there are greater beings than I am. I'm a beginning God. There are greater beings, greater gods, that have created greater universes. The challenges in those universes cannot be fully understood by those who have not completed the challenges of this one. For me to explain them to you would be futile. But nonetheless, the knowledge that there is no end to co-creation, self-creation, and eventually all become God-like beings. No end. It never ends. There is a beginning, and that's the strange part. Those who want to know my beginning can go read it. I don't have time tonight to go through all of that. But it's interesting. My beginning is replicated on a smaller scale by the most simple forms of life and even of pre-life, which is more of chemistry and physics than it is of biology and what today we know as genes and other things. This is the wondrous nature that I, as hopefully all of your benefactors, all of your, to be a benefactor to all of you, that I am so pleased to offer. Sometimes some people, because of the tremendous forces they produce, fall from the path of light. The forces are caused by their separation from me. But then instead of coming and saying, God, help me. I'm willing to do this and that. I'll do what is needed to be co-created with you. I would help. I do help. And those that work with me help. However, they don't sometimes. The forces are so great, they say, if there is a God, I reject that God. Misunderstanding that it is not me that created the forces. It is they. By separating their creations from me, they create darkness. They create destruction. Self and otherwise. When they do this, great sorrow enters my heart. I do not seek retribution for them. Some religions have stated that as one of my objectives. It is not. The reason those statements come is because of the frustrations of the humans who try to explain me and can't. And so in their frustration of being unable to explain me, as I have at least in part tonight, they claim I have this nature of vengeance, of harm, of brutality, of seeking a retribution for those who cannot understand me, who reject me, who defile me. I have no such thing. I have sadness. I understand and feel the meaninglessness and suffering and pain that those who so choose bring onto themselves. I do not shelter myself or prevent myself from experiencing those things, because if I did, then I just might become some kind of vengeful, or if not vengeful, ignorant God. I live through my life forms, life beings, but I do not live for them. I will not usurp their free will. This is my gift, or gifts. It is the way that I have chosen to create this wondrous universe that has seven main parts to it. They are dimensions. And time in each one of those dimensions is represented in a different light. Why? So that each dimension can have some autonomy for the life forms within it, and the life forms from the other dimensions will not immediately have a profound effect, one way or the other, good or not good, on the life forms. So I have found that the ability to allow life to separate is a good thing in the short run, to protect some forms of life and to protect some aspects of what life is. It's not permanent, but it gives some breathing room, because the time itself is the correcting factor that allows those that are wayward from me the opportunity to find me again. There's no need to have that much time for those who don't have that and are, we'll say, closely co-creating with me. They don't need it. But so many other parts of life, so many other human parts of life, in countless worlds, do. And they have that opportunity. So I don't see time as a punishment. I don't see space as a punishment. I see it as a means of retribution, in a sense, for those who are seeking destruction, but the retribution comes from themselves, not from them. They are the ones that are making themselves miserable so that they can become more aware there's some better way. The time also gives them the ability to eventually correct the problem. So time and space are opportunities. Forces are opportunities. Staying ahead of the forces and joining time and space back together leads back to me. Now, much more of this will be explained in tonight's show, but I thought it was important to bring it in at this time so that everybody can sort of have some foreshadowing of where we're headed. Okay, I'm going to stop at this point trying to be the creator. Believe me, I'm not anything even close to that being that I was attempting to do a little acting job on. But I do want you to realize that this being is not some kind of concept or some kind of explanation for a mechanical or chemical or physics model of the universe. Those things are sub parts of human mind thinking that are little pieces of God, not vice versa. And that's the point. That's why I wanted to try to, in a very obviously feeble way, to be God, so that it would be helpful to recognize that God is a real being, a being far beyond human beings, but not so far beyond that we cannot both understand and eventually help create more with God, of God, and of life. Amazing. Now, as God, I mentioned that God actually does have a model than it started with. This is my understanding. Now, could I be wrong about that? I could be, but I don't think so. Its model was to see how good it could do if there was no life. It rejected that model. And that's the reason it chose something much better. And that's why I believe it created the model in the first place, or else it would not fully have understood why it's so important to have a model of life than just it being some kind of whiz-bang creator, but with no co-creation. Why is freedom the first part of God's thought? And also the first part of light. There's two parts to God's thought, and together they make light, but the first part is the dominant part. Why is creation more dominant than consciousness or universal love? Why is it? Because even if you are the most devoted, most loving being in all of the universe, if you are not a slightly more creative than you are loving, or much worse, if you aren't virtually creative at all, you are not going to grow closer to God. The distance will grow more and more between you and the Creator. And time will become more of a problem, an obstacle. And space will become an even greater obstacle, with forces increasing. Remember, the forces come from all the energy that is manifested when time separates from space. This is an odd thing for us to consider, because so many people have the model that sacrifice, which comes from, seemingly comes from the first part of God's mind, can be expressed by just universally loving others. And loving them in ways that seem to help them. Help them to be more loving. That seems like a good thing. But if you don't also help them to be equally and preferably more creative, and if you aren't equally and preferably more creative than you are giving, you have nothing to give. The odd thing about this is we believe, as humans, in illusion, that we can give what others have created. That's the illusion of human life at a certain stage. It's promoted in religions, wrongly, by the way, and it is even promoted in political systems, families, all this mistakenly, of course, and throughout various parts of societies. It's a grand mistake. It seems almost counterintuitive. What's wrong with giving what others have created? And that question needs to be answered through examples and through tonight's show so that we can move ahead of the, we'll say, crowd of folks who think that that model's okay to follow. That model has created everything from socialism and communism to, strangely, many kinds of teaching systems and educational philosophies to the most crazy parts of many religions. That same model. We've got to debunk it tonight. And that has to do with understanding time and space better, which we're going to get to, yeah, you guessed it, in about 2.5 minutes or so. So I think that now we're going to move into some of the nitty-gritty aspects of what this all means and try to gain a much stronger, we'll say, viewpoint of why it's so important to understand time and space and God and how we fit in to this elegant and most wonderful universe that was created by us initially, just as we were created initially, but now is ours to co-create in. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about dimensional time versus space, hopefully made easier by understanding how these elements of our universe, time and space, and forces that come from the separation of time from space, has to do with really understanding our Creator or God. And eventually understanding each other, and maybe debunking some falsehoods along the way. Let me start with the first thing that I ended the last session with. So many people believe in the educational model that people should learn those things that everybody else learns in the same ways they learn them, and they should be measured in their ability to reflect them back or state them in some way called testing, to prove that they have a thing we call knowledge. And this is believed to be, in many people's minds, a correct philosophy. It has led to an unusual pattern, a serious pattern in some people's minds as they grow stronger in knowledge. Because the knowledge itself is illusioned with this idea that more and more knowledge gives a person the ability to determine other people's creations, and worse, to give to other people these other creations and get them to give up or give to other people their creations, and to not be creative themselves, but borrow so much in the creations of a few. Why is this so? Why do we go to school to learn knowledge which comes from others so that we can use the knowledge from the others to supposedly give to people, and to give the people many times the same knowledge that we have? Why do we do that? Because we're in illusion about what God wants for the universe and for life. We think that knowledge is a, we'll say, asset that when used to, quote-unquote, kind of be creative — it isn't real creation, but kind of be creative, it's recreation — when we recreate things, we think it's good. And eventually, we think that recreation, which is recreation in its own, for its own sake, is what we benefit from, this taking of knowledge and using it to give, and sometimes to take from others. It's a very strange idea. Why do humans have this illusion? Well, they have it because when a person develops the ability to have a lot of knowledge, they think in some ways they are superior to people who have less knowledge. And what they fail to understand is that knowledge is nothing more than a historical tool in which to measure one's own ability to be creative. That's what it's really meant for. Let me say that again. Knowledge is a tool. It's something that we can measure in ourselves and for other people to see how creative we are being or how uncreative we are being and how creative others are being or not being. That's its main purpose. You say you didn't know that? All right, let me explain more. God wants us to create and eventually to co-create with others who are co-creating with God. So it wants us to create, co-create with it, God, and to co-create with others who are doing that. Knowledge is a means for us to find how little creation or how much creation we have done. If we have enough knowledge, we can see where we need to be more creative and then to follow that form of co-creation. If it's born in a godly fashion. If we don't have sufficient knowledge, we may think we're being creative and just be copying or retreading those areas that have already happened. Creation is what's key to making us more alive. We are self-created. And it also helps us to help create more with others and of others, and eventually to co-create and help create more of God in the universe. Creation is the first part of God's mind, not knowledge. What about the second part of God's mind? Well, that's givingness. Givingness. Oh, okay, it's not knowledge either. No, it's not knowledge. We'll get to the knowledge part. So, okay, givingness is to help others, right, to become more giving in ways that helps others become more giving. It's the pay it forward model. And to do so as a soul, which means you do so for the purpose of helping people to become more loving, not for the purpose of making them feel better or maybe improving their knowledge. Or maybe some for a multitude of other reasons. But none of those reasons have to do with the reality of what givingness does. It increases consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness is the ability to use knowledge in new ways, in wider and wider circumstances. Consciousness, when you take the consciousness and you apply it to creation, which is the first part of God's mind, you can then take any knowledge you want, and you can do two things with it. You can change that knowledge into something brand new, which is creation. You can make all kinds of new knowledge in the process, and you can figure out, by using the knowledge that you have, whether or not you are doing that or not. Which is probably the most important thing that knowledge actually does for us. Where does knowledge come from? It comes from the ability to intelligently act together. Now you could say, what? Knowledge has to do with intelligent activity? Yeah, it does. Knowledge is really the third part of God's mind. It really has to do more with power and energy than anything else. You've heard the saying, knowledge is power. But in a way, it's true. Knowledge gives us the ability to take either intelligent action or do unintelligent or less intelligent things that will then create forces against us in being able to do anything. So knowledge has a lot of good things to it in a sense, and it is, again, the path. It is the ability for us to use what has already taken place. That's what knowledge really is, the past. And use it in a way so that we can judge the amount of creativity, also increase our consciousness by improving new directions to the uses of knowledge, new ways of connecting knowledge to so many different places and things. It's a wonderful thing. There's nothing wrong with knowledge. It's just understanding what its purpose is and how it exists in relationship to ourselves. People who seek knowledge for some kind of self-gratification and some way of showing off and being egotistical or worse, arrogant, are totally an illusion. They just don't get it. They are completely outside of the realm of what I'm saying is God. Okay. So if we look at our educational system, which is supposed to be about developing consciousness and then creativity together and leading to a godly position, that's what light is. And the light part is more driven by the creation part than by the consciousness. They are not equal. The first part of light is creation. No matter how conscious you are, if you choose not to be creative, you will not become more enlightened. You will become darker. Will not. No, that's hard to understand. Many people, when they hear me and I say they have to be balanced, they think that I mean they have to be equal. Not true. The balance of creation to light, I mean, creation to consciousness, is not a one-to-one. Let me say that over again. There is not a complete equality between creation and consciousness. Creation has a more dominant role. Consciousness is extremely important, don't get me wrong. But it is not equal to creation in terms of God's thought. God says freedom, creation, purpose, these are all the same thing now. First part of its mind is more important than consciousness, universal love, direction to creation. What's the second part of God's mind? But it's less important. Because of our creation, life goes backwards. You move towards death. Without consciousness, life doesn't necessarily go backwards, it just doesn't grow. You can see the difference in what I'm just said. Take an example. Let's say that you decide that, oh, you know what? I'm not going to be very creative. Forget about this creation business. I don't know how many people in a day I meet that tell me, oh, I don't want to be creative. It's too hard. It's way too difficult. I might make a mistake. I don't want to be involved with this ageless wisdom stuff because it's too creative. Forget about creation. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an attorney. He said, you're too creative. You can, you know, you're way beyond the rest of the world. You're too creative. Yeah, okay. I was referring to Ayn Rand and her perspective on creation, which is the same, by the way, as mine. And the other process, let's say the same person, you, decide, well, okay, I won't be creative, but I'll certainly be a good giver. What are you going to give? Well, I'll give what other people have created. I'll give some knowledge. I'll give what people created yesterday, last year, last lifetime. That's good enough, isn't it? Nope. Because what happens is it causes life to become extinguished. Ignoring creation leads to death. Not death just of the form, although that can happen. It leads to death of meaning. How important is that? Oh, yeah. It leads to death of connection to our Creator, to God. Is that important? Yes. It leads to the death of creation of all the connections that we could have had of all the other creators, not just God, every creator. And it leads us to isolation and misery. Oh. Wow. Okay, let's take the other example. Let's say that you're going to be very creative, and you're not going to worry about your consciousness. I've got a friend who's listening tonight, I think. And he tells me, I love being creative. But he doesn't pay as much attention to his consciousness sometimes, and he's creative in this way, but 5 minutes later he's creative in that way. So the direction to his creativity is not controlled by his consciousness. Now he says he's going to do something, and 2 days later he's off doing something different. What happens? Well, that person isn't necessarily leading themselves to complete destruction and death. That's a good thing. They are leading themselves to what I said earlier, to a stagnation, because consciousness allows us to connect ourselves with others. And sure enough, in this one person's experience, that's exactly what he sometimes finds. Sometimes finds that he's losing the connections with those that he most wants to be connected to, because he's ignoring the second part. Yeah, it's not as destructive to his very existence as the first part would be, but it is destructive nonetheless. And you need both the connectiveness and the direction to creation allows the full development of creation and allows the full development of light. So you lack light, but you don't destroy all of it by being creative, but not being equally, well, I shouldn't even say equally, but in a significant fashion conscious. Now, how come they don't become equal? Why isn't there this balance that is equal? Well, the balance is not equal because the difference between destruction to life and stagnation to life are not the same. And how come that is? Why did God come up with this formula that doesn't seem to be equal? And the answer is the following. If you make them equal, let's say you were to say they both destroy life, or they both stagnate life, but the one doesn't do something different from the other, you can end up with a universe that is a stalemate. It's a stalemate. You can end up in a universe where good versus evil does not resolve itself. What I'm telling you now is actually a secret to the universe. I have never said this before. I figured it out a long, long time ago, with some assistance from my teacher. But nonetheless, that is a great secret. Don't ask me why I'm telling you all about that, because I'm not sure I'm supposed to be. But at any rate, it's a great secret that has been held for ages. There it goes. I'm letting the cat out of the bag. Okay, maybe so. But here's the point. You can't make a universe in which light has equal balance between stagnation and destruction. There has to be weight to one side or the other. And in this case, in this universe, the way God chose to make it, and we can co-create with it, it's the first part of God's mind that has the supremacy. I'm not going to give you the exact ratios, although you can kind of figure it out if you read the textbook I wrote. But the point is that this is a fascinating, fascinating element to how our universe works. And it's also important to recognize that certain philosophies, certain kinds of thoughts that people have had, like communism, don't work because they remove most creativity. And they do have some elements in them, social justice, love, but love in a very confining and miserable sense, and a hell of a lot of corruption, by the way, deal. You know, everybody's going to get what they need. And, you know, why do we have to worry about that? Because it removes creation. And people don't have the will to create as you suck them dry from it and overwhelm them with this, everybody's going to be equal. We've got to have equality. Well, God created the universe that isn't equal. Even in its own thought, it's not equal. It discovered that if its thought was exactly equal, you would have a standoff for good and evil. And if you overemphasize the wrong side, the second side, you end up with evil. Darkness. Yeah. Communism and other kinds of crazy stuff. That's why the founders in the United States said, oh, we got it. They were taught this angel's wisdom through the Masonic orders, who did teach some of the things I'm telling you, including the secret that was in Masonic orders. They knew that the first part of light, creation, had preeminence. They got it. Wow. Now, how does this work in space and time? Well, when the dominant element, which is supposed to be creation, is in some way compromised, you immediately start separating time and space because people make what we call mistakes, or life makes mistakes. It doesn't have to be a person, but life makes mistakes. And as life makes more and more mistakes, it takes more and more time in which to accomplish any activity. So the activities become less and less intelligent. Knowledge is misused, and creation declines. One of the ways that you can measure whether or not a system is moving towards light is it should move towards higher and higher levels of creation, less and less giving of knowledge, and more giving of knowledge connected to the stimulation of creation. So once that takes place, you know you're moving towards light. If you don't have that, you're moving towards darkness. And if the very nature of the society is to not do that, is to be socialistic or to force people to be equal, the results are devastating. The average lifespan drops precipitously. People get ill and stay ill much longer. The meaning in life, even worse than the death rate, becomes even more devastated. And people become virtually machines. The very idea of what we call life starts to diminish in life, and people become robots. Okay, and we know when time separates from space, more and more energy is manifested rather than activity, which is intelligence. What is the energy? Well, the energy becomes form. And when we look at this idea of form, it doesn't sound like a bad thing, because spirit, which is the first two parts of God's mind, is supposed to inhabit form. Okay. So it's a natural process. Yes, at each level, dimensionally, of the seven different levels of time and space, the big ones, not the little sub-levels, that each one of those has a certain amount of ratio of time and space, and five of them have significant kinds of forms. Okay. Most people know that if they follow Agent's wisdom. And if you don't, now you heard it. But the difference here is the type of form that is founded is either based upon the correct model of time versus space, where you're growing it closer together, and you're becoming more and more creative, co-creative with others who are co-creating with their creator, or the opposite. If it becomes the opposite, the forms that are created mess up the ability to interact. They become force. The forms that are created themselves become forces. The bodies we inhabit, the things we create around us, become problems that stop us from being able to communicate well with others, to intelligently interact with others. And all of this happens because the forms that we're making are getting more and more dense in each lower level of time and space. And the forces against us being intelligent with others is destroyed. Oh, we may have plenty of knowledge, but the knowledge is foolish, illusioned, and its very existence is for the wrong purposes. Instead of evaluating our consciousness and our creations, it replaces it. And the forms themselves, instead of being forms which lead to beauty and the higher aspects of virtue or light and form, become horrendously destructive elements of the whole world around us, makes it ugly, and it totally hides God, or very large amounts of God are hidden, and people don't see God anymore. Many become atheists. And even those that aren't adopt religious views, which are extremely deterministic and retributive and, we'll say, in every negative way, anti-God. Wow. So time and space, while they are supposed to have some ways of helping life to grow, become against life. And energy, instead of becoming the forms that life can enjoy and help to develop more beauty in, becomes an ugly, horrible, terrible existence. Yeah. And as time becomes more separated from space, we talk about aging and the destructive side of the form that our spirit inhabits. Mm-hmm. And we all suffer, don't we? Yeah. This is a fascinating way of looking at things, isn't it? I'm hoping that some of this is making it easier, because I'm presenting this in such a different fashion than the normal physics ways that I talk about this subject. Yeah, I could talk about it in physics, but you can go back to those earlier shows if you want to hear more about the physics side, or you can read Chapter 10, Enlightening Me. It's very well put in there, if not succinct and difficult to understand. But nonetheless, it's the same subject we're talking about. Wow. All right, so let's be practical. How can we use this model so we can improve our life and the lives of those around us? Are there practical things we can do? Absolutely. That's the whole idea of tonight's show. Practicality about these ideas. Getting rid of the illusions and applying the truth and making it so that we can see every day in new light. Some of the ingredients I'm going to give you, some of you will be afraid of. I know that. But your fear is based wrongly on misconceptions. It's based on looking at things and assuming, making assumptions that come from illusions. Hopefully by the end of the show, that won't so much be there. The first element, obviously, is creation. Creation, though, could be destructive, right? You could create in ways that is destructive to God. So how do you know you're doing the right thing? Well, remember that business about knowledge? Knowledge is like the past in some ways, because it's prior, right? It's prior information that's been brought together so that it can be applied in certain circumstances. That's what knowledge is. That knowledge is a good thing. We can take our knowledge and the knowledge of others, and we can evaluate our creations. That's what it's there for. That was one of the main reasons God liked it. Okay, so knowledge, which is the third part, really, it's part of the third part of God's plan. And it has to do with forces and power and gives us a lot of abilities to communicate and to interact. We can check to see if our creations are helping all the things I just said. Are we interacting and communicating better with others through the creations that we make? We apply knowledge. The knowledge of the past. Let's see if it's getting better or if it's getting worse. Let's say that you want to make a new kind of flying machine, okay? And you got great ideas, but you're not sure if you're sure you can work on creating this thing. But is the creation of it going to allow people to communicate better, allow people to intelligently interact? And there you take some of your knowledge. Well, when people have done this before, and now there's a new way that they can fly around the planet and get to each other sooner and deliver goods and services easier, use less energy and time. That's a good example. Less energy and time is a good example, but it isn't perfect. Some things can use less energy and time and not be virtuous. We have to be careful because we have to apply knowledge. So let's use an example. Let's say I create a great flying ship. It can fly around the world in an hour or two. It uses almost no energy. And the energy it does use, it can get from the sun or some other sources. It has an amazing ability. It can stay aloft at will forever almost. Now I have to look at it and say, okay, well, let me apply some knowledge here. Is it disruptive to the atmosphere? Is it going to cause ozone to be destroyed in the upper atmosphere, ionosphere, exosphere, all the way up there? And is it going to cause things like that to go wrong? Because we know that jet engines sometimes, the chemistry of that is so good for those altitudes. And the answer is no. My particular one doesn't do that. That's a good thing. What about, could it be used in some, unexpected negative way? I mean, heck, anything could fly that fast and just be any place at any time. It could be a great weapon. Well, could it be weaponized and used to destroy others and that kind of thing? Well, sort of. But then again, maybe not any more than any other kind of flying type of thing. So it doesn't appear as though it is necessarily worse. Many people would say, well, if it's faster and if it could stay aloft longer, wouldn't that be more of a weaponized kind of thing? Wouldn't that be more dangerous? Couldn't people take it and use it in a weaponized way? Sort of, but my particular vision for it is that it is bigger in many respects, able to handle large supplies of things, etc., which also makes it an easier target. It's not necessarily better at maneuverability because of that. And oddly, the design I have in mind can't be made very small. There are limitations to making it very small. So its very bigger size reduces some of its weaponizing potential. Smaller ones could be actually more dangerous if they'd be hard to find and hard to defend against. there are some advantages to that. Now I can look at, and you notice I'm using past knowledge. I'm using now, it's the past, to apply to what has been found to be helpful or unhelpful. Now I may take a look at it and say, well, okay, those, it passes those things based upon the knowledge I have. I may want to look up more knowledge from others to see how it applies. Does it use something that is poisonous? Does it create something that's poisonous or that is destructive by its own existence? Well, there could be some things that do that, but my particular design doesn't. As a matter of fact, it is one of the most non-polluting, overall kind of destructive device that I know of. Well, sounds pretty good. I'll give you an example. It's a creative thing, right? So now I'm going to look at it and say, well, how creative? Well, it's hugely creative. Because creation says that it allows life in many, many ways to be more conscious and more intelligently active at the same time. It brings together the three parts of God's mind closer together in a better balance, but not necessarily equal. And it does it in a way in which people will be able better to see God. It won't hide God. It will exhibit it in a number of ways. Simply because it's relatively simple in some ways, but in other ways, it's way more creative than anything I am aware of at the present time. Now, you could ask me, well, is this a true thing you're telling us about? Yes, I shall not lie about it. But why haven't you created it then, since you're so big on creation? Well, the odd thing about that is to be creative of this specific thing requires the ability to do certain activities from which, in recent times, I have been limited by the destructive elements of it. So that's the reason why. I live in a world that is far from copacetic and friendly, and that's just the nature of Earth at the present time. I could go to another world, I guess, and try it out there, but I still haven't given up on Earth, and I hope that this planet someday will have full use of this creative thing. There are many other creative things, but I'm just using something as an example to try to show how you can evaluate the creative side. Now, is God more apparent to me because I've done this? Oh, way more so. So much so, it's remarkable. But in order to do that, to let you see it, I would have to be far more revealing than I think prudent at this point about this specific thing, this specific creation. And I don't want to do that. But at any rate, God is more apparent because time and space are brought together, because it allows so much more freedom for so many more people. It raises the standard of living of the whole world by a vast amount. And especially, it raises the standard of living of those who don't have a very high standard of living, more than those who do. It actually is a quote-unquote maybe equalizer. Maybe it's social justice. But that's only because the consciousness of people are growing from the freedom and creativity of my thought, not because I'm destroying their creativity. Far, far from that. This very quote-unquote creation will lead to so many other kinds of creations that other people can impose and change and use, because then this will become knowledge of that. And then the whole world will become a better place from that. Is it a thing of beauty? Oh, yes. in many respects. It is. Can it be used in numbers of ways that I don't want to reveal right now? Yes. Okay, so you can see that from that single example, hopefully, how the right way of dealing with creation leads to light, enlightenment. Not just for the creator, but for all future people evolved in the prior creation and using that prior creation as knowledge to be more creative in their own ways. Amazing stuff, huh? Yeah, I think it is. All right. What else do we want to talk about in terms of, because I'm looking at the clock here, in terms of dimensional time and space? I want to get into some of the elements that people have so much confusion about. From the highest plane, sometimes referred to as the logoic, or the highest part of time, time becomes a strange thing. In God's mind, time is the creation of life doing it for itself, and God's intermingling with its own interactions with some parts of life to be generous and loving and help, while it is also comparing its own prior creation, which we could call its single self-expression of creation in the universe, to this new creation of life that is co-creating with God and creating a universe that God never would have created. This is an amazing thing. So that's the space and time that God lives in. It's a singular place in some respects, and yet it's widely varied and way beyond anything God could create for itself. Now you take that and you get down to the very lowest level where we are, the dense physical world, and time and space are so separated when we get to this level that dimensionality is really singular. Now we talk about height, width, and depth, and we think we live in those three dimensions. A lot of people add some element of time to it. But the reality is it's really a singular dimension. Yeah, we in illusion think are three. And time is overburdened tremendously with just the past. Almost everything we relegate as a time issue deals almost exclusively with the aspect of knowledge and interactions with others than it does with consciousness or creation at our level of existence, living in the physical and etheric part of the physical world. So we're just overwhelmed by this, and we're overwhelmed by forces. Now let's look at this from this model. At the physical level, the energy is so dense that what we call most of the energy is really matter. Now what is matter? Matter is energy that has taken on a form that is almost impossible through the first two parts of God's mind, which is thought, to change. The ratio of how much density energy has that can't be changed by thought is called the quantum constant, or some people call it Planck's constant. And here, in the dense physical world, we don't even recognize that the first two parts of God's mind can change the intelligent activity, which is no longer intelligent and has become very unintelligent and is now this gross amount of energy, which is, a lot of it has become matter. Wow. What does the matter do to time? Well, it causes time, as we know, to separate from space. It takes a huge amount of time to do a little bit of activity here in the physical world. A little bit less amount of time to do the same activity in the electromagnetic or etheric parts of the same physical world we live in. So if you leave your physical body and you go into your, some people call it the etheric double, or the electromagnetic part of your physical body, and you travel around in that, it's easier to achieve any kind of intelligent activity in the same period of time. So things are easier to do and faster. Do things faster. Make sense to you? What happens then in this model that people are so familiar with? They take a huge amount of energy, like a black hole, and you get too close to it. What happens to time? Well, it takes almost forever to do almost nothing. And you get frozen in time. Where does that take place? At a place called the event horizon. Past that point, time doesn't have any meaning in terms of its movement. It's virtually frozen. That's how serious the form can become in terms of the density of matter. Now, what is a black hole? It's a point at which all of the energy that enters the event horizon of the black hole becomes something other than what we consider to be normal energy. It becomes a kind of energy that has a new form, and the new form is frozen in time. Here. Now I'm going to tell you a secret. On the other side of the black hole is the white hole, in a different dimension of time and space, and different white holes are different openings. And the energy in those other dimensions is freed. And it becomes a white hole because the white hole represents light and it becomes enlightened and time tremendously is released. And it takes very little time to do anything on the other side of the black hole. But on our side, we talk about the event horizon and past that point as being infinite to our perspective. Someone falling into a black hole point past that point is endlessly in time doing so. All right, so that's called time dilation. And huge amounts of energy, like even from a rocket motor, trying to go from one place to another, displaces the amount of time to the perspective of the person involved in the rocket ship. Time slows down for them, just the way if they were moving closer to a black hole it would be. And if they return, very little time will have taken place to them, because it's slowed down tremendously. But a huge amount of time may have taken place for those who were not in using as much energy, were moving across space. Now, in some ways, you can say that people that are doing that are joining space and time, and there is some truth to that, because they have to be approaching the speed of light to be able to do that. But you should also be aware, and don't get confused by this, that when we compare dimensions of time, not within the same dimension as it would be traveling in a spaceship here, to comparing, say, the astral world to there in the physical world, then a whole different set of principles applies. Because in the astral world, the intelligent activity goes up in relationship to the non-intelligent. The amount that thought affects energy, which is, again, the quantum constant, gets much bigger. So you can change things in an eye blink with your thought in the astral world, which would have virtually no effect here in the physical world. And that's what people experience when they go through the astral world. Other things that change, though, is that time itself is becoming more unified with space. And it takes less time in which to do any activity. Therefore, people experience a dilation in time in which they have much more time to do whatever they want in relationship to those who live here. their perspective, we're barely moving here. And their life is tremendously expanded. They have a, in a year of our time here, they can live 24 years or so, maximally 24 years or so in the astral. That's a lot. And since they live there for a long time, because their bodies don't wear out quite as fast, they can live for hundreds of years in only 30, 40, 50 years of our time here. So that's the interesting thing about it. Again, that can be very confusing if you don't understand that you're changing the perspective of the dimensional time to the space. You have to compare time within its own dimension of space to understand how time works. Some people don't get that, and they think the reverse, that somehow the time is dilated in the opposite way when you go to the astral. Well, that's completely wrong. There's some quote-unquote psychics who have missed that understanding. They actually read some of my books, but they got that part wrong. Okay, so looking at the perspective and how it works, the process is that as you increase dimensionality, you decrease the amount of time separates from space, because dimensionality allows activities to become more intelligent and for thought to have a greater effect, therefore, on energy, on the aspects of energy which we call form, too. So you can create forms virtually just how you think if you're in the astral world or higher in dimensionality. Now, what's the added dimension that we have in the astral world? Well, you have the three dimensions that I call one here, but you also have the dimension of the direction of energy, Time, yes, exists in the astral world too, but it's more complete. You have not this emphasis as much on just the past. You actually have past and future somewhat together, somewhat balanced. So you have a better understanding of time. Now, why don't we have the present available for us so much here? Because almost everything in our perspective in time is always taken from the past. Because we can't almost instantly do anything here. It takes so much time to do virtually everything. That's the difference. People in the astral world, yes, they have the ability to direct energy in one of three ways. They can direct it so that it's moving away from them to the benefit and service and help, we call astral love, of others. That type of energy, movement, that we can create with our thought, creates a unifying of time and space, so it takes less time in which to do everything, and there's less forces. And we're closer to the people. We feel much closer to the people in the astral world than we can here. And we're also closer to God when we do this kind of creation of astral love. It's a virtue. But you can also direct the same energy towards yourself, because you're selfish. Who cares about others? I just want to make things for myself. I just want to have things for myself. I just want to feel good. That produces the opposite effect. The forms that we're using diminish. Our bodies age quickly. And it takes more time to achieve any result. And our communication with others diminish. Our closeness with others decreases. And the space between them and us increases. Wow. That's what takes place. Now, I said there were three things. The third thing we can do is we can kind of do some giving and some taking, virtually at the same time. Sometimes they negate each other. Sometimes one is greater than the other. A bit of both. The best is to love universally and all the time. Focus out, I call it. You do that, You live at the highest realms of the astral world when you do go there. And your life is one of service and one of enlightenment, one of great meaning and closeness with others, and together closeness with God. That kind of dimensional time is wonderful. And we all have a choice. Much more so we can see it in the astral world than here. The illusion is not as great in relative terms to the physical world. Some people are more illusion than some people who live in the physical world. But that's because they're far more selfish in relative terms. It's truly remarkable. We're given the grace of God that when we go to the astral world, it becomes easier to see God, easier to understand, easier to create virtue, light and form, and to live a more virtuous existence. So we have to tough it out here, and it could be very hard. The astral world couldn't be easier for those who go down that road, and hopefully we all will. But I know some will at the present time on Earth. I mean, what happens when we get to the monastic or mental world? Well, you're adding a whole other dimension, but the dimension was part of a dimension before. It was the time element. But now time becomes a full dimension, past, present, and future, and you can actually live in all three parts of it, first prospectively going back in time, and then retrospectively coming back and figuring out what you did wrong and recreating the corrected elements. That's called the mental Akasha. You can eventually live in all three parts of time and create virtual futures. Whoa. Isn't that what God does? Yeah. You're getting closer to God, you see. You're actually living some of the God experience, more so in the mental world by far, especially as you move towards the soul's existence, which is in the higher mental world. Right now I'm talking about the lower part, but still, you're getting closer because you're living in the whole dimension of time, eventually. And the whole dimension of direction and energy stays with you. That dimension remains. Although the astral energy is no longer there, it's just mental energy you're dealing with. And you deal in the whole dimension of what we call the material existence. Yes, there's no more physical energy there. But what the physical energy did and didn't do while you were physically alive can be represented in mental energy. And so you can relive those existences and improve upon them tremendously. Whoa! This is way closer to being God. Of course, that quantum constant I was talking about, your ability to change form instantly with your thought, the monastic thought now, is phenomenal. You can recreate an entire past and live through it days of time. Just like you're really there, yeah, because you are in a sense, but it's a mental energy you're creating. And you do this in seconds. You can create it. It would take hours and days to do it in the astral world. So it would take years or maybe a lifetime to try to do it in the physical. You can see how this dilation model gives us so much more capability to change the forms, to reduce the forces, and to get closer to others, including our God. Because we're becoming amazingly creative. Energy is following thought. Thousands and thousands and thousands of times more so than it does here. Well, actually, the best way is probably to put it in hundreds of thousands if you're getting into the mental world. Wow. The quantum constant is radically larger. Another thing I need to mention here is when we're being so much more super creative, there is something that many people are afraid of and bothered by. So let's talk about that for a minute here. So many people are really afraid of the creative model that I'm presenting here, because it's not just a model, it's the way the universe is, but that model to them, because they see that things are open so easily to change. And that gives them fear. They don't know what to do with that. It frightens them that so much can be changed with so little of just thought. Of course, to someone who's really creative, they say, wow, that's great, I'll take that. But for those who are afraid of the change and the speed of the change, based upon prior illusions where mistakes were so prevalent in any kind of change that it could cause great suffering for them, they now take that and in illusion believe it's what's going to happen when you have such great abilities in these higher realms. It's not. It's counterbalanced by consciousness expansion and by the ability to make sure that the consciousness is applied correctly by looking at the knowledge model. It all works fine, but people don't experience that while they're physically alive, and they carry these fears with them. So they may not be as creative as they could be because of the fear. Overcoming the fear is best to be done while you're physically alive. Then you have a much more rich life in these higher realms. Much more meaning can be brought into life. Now, what are people really creating mostly? What they're creating isn't things per se. They're creating their relationship with others and with God. And they're doing so through what we think of as the interaction model of using energy and form, yes, but these are the lower planes that it's done on, where form seems to be a, we'll say, important deference to the way God is manifested. That's fine. That's right. God chose. There will be more form and denser forms in the lower dimensions. As dimensions become richer with more aspects to them, the forms take on less importance because they are becoming animated and they're becoming actualized in real time, not through the mistaken illusion time of the physical world or sometimes the lower astral subworlds. This is the difference. It changes our perspective. And those that pick up on that faster and do it better have much more meaningful lives on the higher inner planes. They do. Also, you're closer, you're much closer to every other being who's doing something similar to you in those higher realms. Yet the realms themselves are vastly larger. We call them inner planes because we're so much closer to all those who exist there. But in terms of dimensionality, they're vastly greater than our universe, as we understand it in the physical sense here. It's hard to understand this because our perspective is, in a bigger universe, you're more separated from everybody, but that's only because we're not doing intelligent activity and we're not creating enlightenment. But in these higher realms, the universes are much greater in space and time and dimensionality, yet we are more one with everyone. So we feel and are closer with everyone and with God. Isn't that strange? I have pictures of this in the textbook, where people are actually closer together, but the universe itself is getting larger. Because the time and space they exist in is more interconnected without illusion. And they are co-creators together at the same time. This is the remarkable aspect of the dimensional time and space issue. Wow. I hope this is making it a little easier for you to see. Granted, these areas that I'm getting into, you've got to use a lot of imagination for, right? Because for most of us in the physical world, this is not our experience. The physical world is the one of illusion, but we don't know that. We think the whole universe is just like everything that's around us when we look around. And yet we're living in the most separated between us and everything else universe we could be in, and also the smallest at the same time. Now, the universe is enormous in our perspective, but if we were really close to everyone and everything in the universe, the way we are in the higher dimensions where the universe is much larger, we wouldn't feel the size like we feel it here. reversal Iceland. Heck, if someone's in another galaxy, for all intents and purposes, there's no way we're going to be able to communicate with them at the present time at our levels of illusion. You see what I'm saying? Even if they're in another star system, that's pretty much true. Now, the more advanced consciousness beings, yeah, they can communicate. But not us. We're on Earth. And we're pretty much messed up, right? All right, so let's take this to another dimensional reality. You get to the next dimension. You get to the Buddhic, they call it, or some people prefer, intuitional realm. What's going on there? Well, now thought itself has been joined with time, and a new element to the connectivity of beings changes dimensionality. The knowledge that each person has is no longer has to be given to anyone else for it to be used. Knowledge, which is the past, if we look at it from the perspective of God's mind, is instantly known by all beings who can think in the Buddhic realm. They become what we call omniscient. What is omniscience? Well, it's all-knowingness. That's the meaning. And what is knowledge? Knowledge means since you know everything about what has happened in the past, about anything. But that doesn't make you the most creative or the most conscious just because you were omniscient. It gives you the ability to know when you're not, and it gives you much grander abilities to be creative and conscious as long as you respect and love the knowledge you have by giving it to others and in service to others. You can't be in Buddha consciousness if you're not in service to others. How do you like that one? Yep, that's the ticket in. And there's none other. So only by being 100% focused out do you reach omniscience. Wow. And what is the realm of sense that is created through this intuitional state? Well, the senses of beauty. You can now sense God in all things, even in evil, when it is going to be perfected at some point in the future. You can immediately sense what's lacking, and you can sense what it will be like when it's put together. And that's God's gift, because when you have the sense of beauty, and you give the sense to others, people can sense the same thing in some circumstances. It's an amazing sense. Do humans have this sense? Not usually. We have a vague reflection of it in our astral body, and we call that beauty. But we really don't work with it. We don't use it the way superhumans do, or some very, very advanced humans can sometimes. And so this is what we gain going into the intuitional realm. The dimensionality is the ability to be all-knowing. And it comes from the shared sense of you. Wow. Another wow. What happens to time and space? Well, time and space now become very active. Strangely, they are relatively more inactive in the mental, astral, and physical worlds than they are relatively active. So much more time is, we'll say, frozen or not being used properly, and so is space. But when you get to the Buddhic realm, time and space become much more active, so they can be used more in activities between beings, because after all, they're sharing their sense of knowledge, or their ability to use knowledge all together and their sense of beauty together. It's an amazing thing that they've done. You see? Okay, let's move on to see what happens as dimensional time and space start really coming together. The next level is sometimes referred to as the atmic or spiritual plane. What's going on there? Well, instead of the beings who are now definitely superhuman beings, no human beings are going to get to atmic consciousness. Once they get there, they not only retain their sense of beauty, although they give some of that up, by the way, they instead become all-powerful. Now, what is power? Power is the ability to change all forms, all energy, back and forth, at will, to any levels that a being seeks to do with. It allows enormous levels of creativity using the third part of God's mind. It allows perfect communication. It allows a new-founded way of activity to take place, because the activities between beings can be so perfectly shared by sharing power among them that literally they can co-create using the third part of God's mind perfectly at the top of the atmic plane. Whoa, that's something more than beauty. Now, why do they have to give up some beauty to do that? Because the universe itself is not perfect, and so they can only choose to create things that are among themselves that are perfectly created for themselves, with the unfortunate imbalances that comes for all those parts of life that are not willing or can cannot be possible for them to participate. Co-participate in. So they accept that limitation on themselves because they will not interfere with the freedom of all other beings in their power, unless they were evil, and evil does the reverse. Evil is not all-powerful, but is very powerful, and it uses power for the destruction of God and to take freedom away from others, and therefore to destroy creativity. Wow. Isn't that neat? So we now got a basis for how we can measure evil, how we can see what good is doing, and how power now becomes something that we can directly understand better than the vague ways that people talk about, well, power is good or power is bad and this and that. No, there's ways to directly discover and understand. Again, you're using somewhat of knowledge, too. You see, knowledge still can be used at that level as a yardstick. Although most beings at the power level are pretty much, they are omniscient, but they, because they're also omniscient and omnipotent, but they do something that's beyond what we would normally call omniscience. I don't want to get too deep into that because it's a fairly complicated subject, but I'm only going to go a few more minutes, too. I'm going to not take too much more of the show and keep going. We would be closing right now, but we're not. We're going to keep going. And so, when we reach the next level, you reach this place called the monadic element. You live in a place, eventually, where you become omnipresent with all other beings in that space, and time and space stop. You give up time and space in your creations to become omnipresent. That means completely present with all of the beings who collectively together with those other beings, you have perfected the first two parts of God's mind. Now, perfection does not mean, again, complete balance. Perfection at this level means something actually that's a little strange for some people to understand. It means that you can be both sides of any perspective completely. It's a new kind of looking at things. It's virtually like having two sides to yourself at the same time. One side of yourself is the individuality that you've been growing and making who you are. And the other side is the oneness, the perfected oneness of being omnipresent in all three parts of God's mind, in a sense, but the first two parts completely, with the beings that exist with you in the monadic world. Now, there's two ways to do that. One is as undeveloped as a monad, where you have an experience of lower realms. And the other one has been one who has ascended to the very heights, the highest heights. What happens to time and space there? Well, a new thing. Dimensional space becomes outside of time, and time takes on a new meaning completely. Time now is the perspective of God's time for the first time in something less than God's existence. You start living God's time. What is God's time? God's time is based upon the creation of all things as they are unfolding, and as they may unfold in the future, but as they are unfolding in the present, and as they have unfolded in the past, with God enjoying the co-creation of these things and occasionally intervening. Remember, God is not a passive being. Occasionally intervening. And eventually you move on to the final stage. The final stage is where you become all the things I just said that God is, except you know you do not intervene. You're a non-intervener. Instead, you are the passive observer, but you become the experience of borrowing God's experience for the time that you become the passive observer. So you do experience what God is growing into while you do not intervene with anything else. You only observe during part of your existence. Another part of your existence can be at the same time, this is hard to understand, where you do live a life where you may intervene in certain ways with certain great beings, even outside of the universe that we call ours. It's a little bit too complicated to get into tonight, of course. And I'm only mentioning it because some people read my textbook and they say, well, what about that thing? I said, oh, yeah, okay. So I mentioned it. And finally we come to the point where you've reached your silent stage, you've gone through that, and now you finally reach the dimensional time and space, where all of time and all of space joins together. From that point forward, you project what you believe the universe will be like, and you live it out. Every living thing, everything that's ever going to happen from that point forward, you live. You exist. Each being that reaches that point does that and adds it to God's experience. But God is still going to stay here and wait for the real universe to do that. So this is your creation in a virtual mode forward, but you actually experience every element of it. Every element. That's the richness. And you do so with the incredible, talking about meaningful, it's the most meaningful of all meaningful existences because you live out all lives, past, present, and future. But the future is a projected virtual future, but you still experience it. It's not just observing, it's direct experience of everything until everything has evolved to the point and developed itself to the point of leaving the universe, and then when everything is done, you leave too and go on to a new universe. God still exists in this one. Life still exists in this one. But you've had your day in the sun. And you've done the maximum amount of creation you can ever do. You've done the maximum amount of conscious development you can ever do. And you've done the most amount of activity that anything can ever do. And you're done here. Done with the dimensional time and space, ready for a new experience in a new universe, one or three that you will have chosen to go to. And that those universes work in a different way from ours. They're a higher universe. They have a more complex nature to them. And a God that our God will eventually be sometime in another time and place, that it will create another universe that will be greater than this one. And all beings will eventually create universes themselves, and then eventually will create the highest of all universes, which never, ever stops growing. universes at the lower than those levels do. But the highest of universes never stops growing. There can be infinite ones of those, but they never stop growing. There is no end to creativity. There is no end to consciousness. There is no end to life. And there is no end to constant and the most amazing interactions of life together. And there's no end to God. Well, I hope tonight's show has been somewhat enlightening. Yes, I've talked about these things before, but the thing that I haven't done is try to make it as easy as possible. Hopefully I did. I know at the end here I was kind of, it was going pretty fast. But, some of these things are hard concepts to think about. And I don't want to belabor you at the end of the show to think about the hardest things in the show. I try to do it at the beginning, not weigh you out so much. So I hope that tonight's show has given you a better understanding of dimensional time versus space. And it has been a bit easier than some of the other shows. And I hope it's made some change in each person who did listen this evening. Well, this has been Miles McFlower, and until next week, I hope that this will change a little bit of what your existence is. Remember, you can go back and re-listen to the show. If you say, well, I got it until the last 10 minutes, I'm like, dead cool, back and listen to it. And until next week, this has been Miles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.